today's great solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul brings us to Rome. This is something like a foundation day in Rome. It's a big celebration in the whole church, but especially in Rome, because both of these saints were martyred in Rome and buried in Rome, and there are two big basilicas in Rome. One is St. Peter's, everyone knows St. Peter's. Another one is St. Paul. St. Paul's outside the walls, they call it. The tombs of these two saints. In some years, on this day, there is a consistory, the ceremony by which new cardinals are formally installed. And the cardinals are sometimes referred to as the princes of the church. Modern popes have again and again warned the cardinals not to act like princes. This is one of Pope Francis's repeated warnings. Don't act like princes in the worldly sense. Unfortunately, throughout the history of the church, at least after the 4th or 5th century and into our own time, this has been a problem. The cardinals take on a very worldly demeanor and attitude. But that is not essential to the church. In fact, that's contradictory, especially to Peter and Paul, the founders. The church very deliberately puts these two saints together on this big feast. It would be easy to honor either one of them because they're both giants of the faith, but the church puts them together. Peter representing the hierarchical structure of the church, the popes. Paul representing the evangelical dynamism of the church, the missionary zeal of the church. Both together. Now, both Peter and Paul were apostles, so they're both hierarchical. Both Peter and Paul were dynamic missionaries, so they both represent both. But symbolically, Peter represents the stability, the structure of the church. And Paul represents the zeal of the church to go to the ends of the earth. Peter and Paul are giants, but not in the sense that the world thinks of great men. Maybe because it seems that the election process is kind of kicking in here. The election's next year, but from what I gather, the potential candidates are starting to maneuver and make sure they get their names in the press. And you know how it works. If you want to make it big in the world, you have to present yourself as great. And if you want to attack your opponent, you make sure that he doesn't look great. So you pick out some flaw in his or her character or behavior and put it out into the press. Well, this is the way it is, and especially in modern times, the media determines so much. Peter and Paul, however, do nothing to make themselves look great, and they're very clear about how unqualified they are as servants, or as disciples of Christ. It's the opposite of worldly greatness. Peter and Paul are, by their own description of themselves, not qualified. They shouldn't be apostles. Remember, Peter, when he was called, said to the Lord, "Leave me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." Don't pick me. I'm not one of the one. Paul repeatedly reminded the church that he was a persecutor of the church. He's the least of the apostles. He doesn't even deserve the name. But God chose both of these men. God chose them. Jesus chose them and established them as foundation stones. So they tell us simply by their own place in the church what this church is built on. Yes, it's built on the foundation stones of the apostles, but the apostles themselves are not solid stones without Jesus Christ. They don't have human greatness to fall back on. Their greatness is in their faith. Their greatness is in the grace of their being chosen and their faithfulness to that grace. Sometimes people wonder why the church is officially called the Roman Catholic Church. Why Roman Catholic? And enemies of the church will come up with lots of arguments that show why it's not really the church. But it's significant, Roman Catholic. Catholic, of course, means universal. Catholic church. Everybody would hope that the church is universal and would acknowledge that that's the plan of God, is for the church to be universal. It's for everyone. The gospel is for all nations. What about this Roman thing? Jesus never went to Rome. Jesus is the one who established the church, and he did it in Jerusalem. We don't know what he told the apostles about Rome. He may have told Peter to go there. Who knows? But I mean, there's a tradition that, yes, he certainly told Peter to go there. But in the Gospels, it doesn't say that. Jesus is very well aware that they're under the domination of the Roman Empire. In fact, it was Rome that put him to death. So it's not like Jesus didn't know about Rome. He knew about Rome, and he knew the authority of Rome. Remember the time when they asked him about paying taxes, and Jesus said, well, show me the coin. Whose picture's on the coin? Well, Caesar, the emperor. Give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, give to God what belongs to God. So Jesus knew very well about Rome, but he didn't go there and he didn't establish the church there. But Peter went there. Tradition is he went there fairly soon after the resurrection, and he was the first bishop of Rome, and he died in Rome, the first pope. So, and Rome becomes the center of the church, not Jerusalem. The Holy Land is where everything happened, but the church is established in Rome. Now, Jesus didn't say that the church is built on a place. He builds the church on the rock of Peter and his confession of faith. The church is built on Peter, not on Rome. But it's in Rome. And this, the reason why this is significant is that the church is both universal and particular. It's both everywhere and in particular places. It's both spiritual and physical. It's outside of time, it extends into heaven, and it's also in time with ordinary people in ordinary places and ordinary buildings and microphones and books and vestments and candles and stuff that exists in time, including all the weaknesses of the human family, the temperaments and the vices and the fears that are part of the human family. So universal might seem like the positive side of the description of the church, and Roman is like the negative side, the human dimension with all its weaknesses. But God chose to establish his church on ordinary people and to include in the church all ordinary people, sinners. If we want to understand the church, we can understand her by looking at Peter and Paul together. Yes, we think of them and we honor them as great saints, but we also see in them God at work in the fallen human condition. Rome, if you've ever been to Rome, you know it's a mess. Chaotic jumble of like any modern city, except that it has ancient roots that make it even more complicated. And if you know anything about the Vatican, you know that it's a complicated bureaucratic mess, financial mess, lots of infighting, lots of confusion. The church, we just can't get our act together. Why? Because we're a mess. I'm sure you've heard the story of, I can't remember who the world leader is that wanted to defeat the church or wipe out the church and threatened, I'm going to wipe you out. And then one bishop or cardinal said, well, we haven't been able to wipe it out with all our sins. I don't think you'll be able to wipe it out. The church is solid because of God's promise that the gates of the netherworld will not prevail. The church is solid because Jesus established the church on the rock. Even though the rock himself is a weak man, even though the rock himself denied Christ 3 times, what kind of a rock is that? Well, the strength comes from God, not from us. This is the constant lesson we learn from the church. And it's a very encouraging one because all of us are pretty weak rocks. We who are, and we might look like the committed ones, go to church every day, pray every day. Well, if we who are called and dedicated are so weak, how can this possibly succeed? It succeeds because of Jesus Christ, his faithfulness, his grace, his mercy. Well, I suppose there are better ways to honor Peter and Paul. Maybe this isn't the best way, but I think it's a good lesson for us. The church has to be a humble church. Well, Pope Francis is often repeating this. This is not the time for the church to be triumphalistic, to boast about how great it is or how vast it is or its power. This is a time for the church to be humble and to let God shine forth in the weakness of our human efforts. A humble church reveals the glory of God. So this great feast day, which is a glorious feast, is also a humble feast. Two humble men who were killed by the state, by Rome, and now they show that Rome can't defeat the church. I mean, the state can't defeat God. So we don't have to fear anything.